everybody. Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. It's a special day for me today. I'm actually flying back home after being in the Bay Area for about 9 weeks. And I was almost tempted to schedule a rebroadcast for this show today because I've got a lot going on, packing and shipping boxes and just resting up and getting ready for the flight. But I felt like we needed to talk. And I'm just really committed to sharing a lot of information that I believe is important. And I wanted to have this moment with you. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being there now or whenever you tune into this program. And let's have that conversation. Now, part of the conversation is hearing back from you. And I do love to hear back from you. You know where to find me, info@realmeals.org. Or you could post a comment on my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, either where this show is posted or anything else that interests you on the site. I really treasure those comments. So if you have something to share or something to say, I appreciate hearing it. So as you may know, we just finished up doing a production of The Music Man in the Bay Area, and it's with a special company called Playful People Productions, whose mission is to be kind. And that's part of what I want to talk to today. I want to talk about courage and kindness. And the interesting thing, one of the things that we kept telling our cast and then the audience is that theater, for example, theater and many other forms of media are not complete without the audience. It's a conversation, and theater, the audience is live and you really get that feedback. Here with radio and other media, we don't always feel the feedback. There's, of course, there's analytical data today to let us know how many of you are out there. But I really love the individual feedback, getting responses from people and feedback, because I take a big sigh here. We need to engage with one another face to face as individuals, looking up from our screens and looking into people's eyes. And as I'm thinking of it, not just humans' eyes, but non-human animals as well. I think we can learn a lot when we look into the eyes of another being. I love looking into a cow's eyes and sharing my message that I know that that cow is not food. Or even looking into the eye of a fish or a bird. There's a lot going on there. And I truly, truly believe that you can share compassionate thoughts just by looking into someone's eyes. And that includes the eyes of a non-human. And I've shared this story before. I wasn't planning on sharing it, but the universe is telling me to tell you now, because it has to do with just what I'm talking about and art. And I believe that art is so important for humanity's sake. Art asks the questions. Art does not necessarily provide the answers, but it asks the questions and wakes us up and makes us think and wakes us up from sleepwalking and helps us get back on a path of doing good and being kind. Okay, so here's my story, and then I'll get to the long list of things I wanted to talk to you about today. I had done a production of Evita a while back, and I was staying with a woman who was hosting me, and she had, I think, a dog, several cats. She had a bird in the kitchen. She had a bird in the living room. The birds were in cages, and I was grateful to be there. I wasn't going to tell this woman how to live or what to do, but I'm not particularly fond of birds being kept in cages. And the one in the kitchen seemed more chipper no pun intended, happier because there was a lot of light, there was engagement, there was activity. The one in the living room, there wasn't much activity at all, and the living room was frequently dark. And I felt very, very bad for that bird. And one day when the host was out, I went into the living room and I talked to the bird. I'm getting choked up just thinking about the story. And I apologized to the bird and I told the bird that I was sorry. There was nothing I could do about its captivity. And I wished that I could free it, but that wasn't my choice. That wasn't my ability. So what I could do was I sang to the bird, and I sang a song from Stephen Sondheim's Sweeney Todd called Green Finch and Linnet Bird. It's sung by a 16-year-old character who is being imprisoned by her guardian, the judge, who has some actually secret desires for her and is thinking about marrying her. It's really a sick story. And she's kept captive like a bird. And she sings this beautiful story song to the birds that she loves looking at. And in the end, she asks them, "If I cannot fly, let me sing." Talking about if I'm going to be imprisoned, how can I make the best of my situation and teach me how to sing? And I sang that to the bird, and then I left. And a few weeks later, the host came to me, and she said, "The most amazing thing happened. The bird in the living room hasn't sung in months, and it started singing again." And that's a true story. And so when I say look into people's eyes and look into non-human animals' eyes, have a conversation. Have a conversation like we're having now. We can all make a difference in big and small ways. So the topic of today's show is courage. And I thought about it because I was recently reading in the New York Times a story about the valve turners. Have you heard about them? The valve turners, as the New York Times described them, I'll read it. The valve turners are, for the most part, quiet people. They wear sensible shoes and several attend church regularly. Most are parents. One is a grandparent. All are white, all are college educated, and none are truly poor. While all are deeply concerned about climate change, none are immediately threatened by its worst effects. No one's home has been flooded. None are immediately threatened by its worst effects. No one's harvest or northward creeping tropical diseases. I skipped a line there. No one's home has flooded and no one's health has been seriously damaged by heat waves or failed harvest or northward creeping tropical diseases. All say that this is relative safety and the relative advantage of age, race, education, and wealth that makes them feel they have a particular responsibility as climate activists to push the boundaries of civil disobedience. And what they did was they broke into areas, trespassed, and turned off pipelines, closed pipelines all over between Canada and the United States, shutting off the flow of oil in many places. And as a result, they were arrested, and they have all received sentences. I think, fortunately, none of them have been too terrible. I believe one of them got about 3 years of prison time. But it was a fascinating story, and a story that I don't think we really heard about in the news. This article talked about how their tactics, the valve turners' tactics, are not popular within the environmental movement, and they remain controversial. And I'm not saying that I support their action, but I'm wondering, what is the best kind of activism? Is there an ideal kind of activism to make positive change? And I'm just asking the question. I don't have the answer. I know that many, many, many are frustrated because we see so much wrong in the world. Some of us do nothing because we feel like our actions are not going to have any impact at all. And then others are empowered to do very dramatic, drastic things. And is it right? I'm kind of impressed by the Val Turners and their courage. And my question is, how do we channel, how do we channel our frustration into effective activism? So I wanted to talk a little bit about today about what courage looks like, the many shades of courage, and the relationship between courage and activism. So I wanted to start with that speech that the Cowardly Lion does in The Wizard of Oz. Do you remember it? Because whenever I think of courage, I can't help but think of this monologue, which I'm going to say for you now. Courage. What makes a king out of a slave? Courage. What makes the flag on the mast to wave? Courage. What makes the elephant charge his tusk in the misty mist or the dusky dusk? What makes the muskrat guard his musk? Courage. What makes the Sphinx the seventh wonder? Courage. What makes the dawn come up like thunder? Courage. What makes the Hottentot so hot? What puts the ape in apricot? What have they got that I ain't got? And everyone says, courage! And the lion says, you can say that again. But the Cowardly Lion was not cowardly at all. In fact, we saw how much courage the Cowardly Lion had in the story, The Wizard of Oz. And I love how many of these stories that we've grown up with and the stories that are presented in theaters and in musicals I particularly have an affection for because I'm involved as a performer and now as a conductor. There are so many messages, and I find it's an interesting way to learn and maybe even a form of activism. It makes me think of the next show that we're going to be doing. So we just finished The Music Man, but now we're going to be coming back to the same theater later in the summer to do Into the Woods. Are you familiar with that show by Stephen Sondheim? We just watched the original Broadway production on YouTube, which you can do. Just Google Into the Woods on YouTube and you can watch it. And I highly recommend it. It's filmed, like I said, from the Broadway production. It's like you're there in the theater. And I'm very critical of most Broadway productions, but I think this was a nearly perfect cast and production. But there were a lot of messages in that show that I love and that I keep discovering. This show, Into the Woods, touches on pedophilia, adultery, infertility, prejudice, fear, hunger, beauty and ageism, cooperation, slavery, sexism, and even food. We have to talk about food on this show. This show is called It's All About Food. In the play, we have a number of grim fairy tale stories all merged into one. And in the first act, they all resolve the way they resolve in the traditional stories. And then in the second act, we find out what happens afterwards, and everything kind of falls apart, and things are not happily ever after at all. So there's Jack and the Beanstalk, and Jack has a milky white cow. And he and his mom are very poor. They're running out of food, and Jack is supposed to sell the cow. And Jack ultimately exchanges the cows for magic beans, which turn into the beanstalk, and we go into that story. But I thought it was interesting because they were complaining that the cow didn't give milk, and they needed the milk because they were hungry. But what they didn't mention, and I don't think they knew, because most people don't connect the dots today between cows giving milk and how she gives milk. She needs to be impregnated and give birth to a baby so that she's able to give milk. And this cow was not pregnant or giving birth to anyone. They were just waiting for her to get fat and give milk. And then later on in the show, when Jack has sold the cow and wants to get her back, he's hoping that she doesn't end up on someone's plate. And these are subtle little messages that you get in the show that I think go by much too quickly for most people to catch, which is why it's great to be able to watch a film more than once, or like on YouTube here, you can watch this show over and over until you get every little juicy morsel that's in it, because there are so many and they go by so quickly. And the other thing is that Jack in this particular show is considered a bit odd and dumb for having a cow for a best friend. Lots of subtle little references for you to think about all of the things that we naturally do in our culture that may not be right. And my favorite theme in this particular show is the idea that we need to be careful about what we wish for. What are you wishing for? What is it that you want? Everyone in this story is wishing for something. And when they get their wish, there are always ramifications. It never turns out to be perfect once they get their wish. And the point is, we need to be careful for what we wish for. So, for example, today you've heard stories. I think there's a woman in the news who was a big lottery winner, winning over $500 million or something like that. And one of the rules in most of these lottery winnings is you have to make the name of the winner public. But when someone's name is put out there as winning a lot of money, then they're inundated with their friends and families making demands, wanting to share in their good fortune. And there could be theft and kidnaps and all kinds of things related to the fact that people know that you're extremely wealthy. So people may be wishing for wealth, but may not realize the ramifications of tremendous wealth once you have it. I mean, I know several people who are very wealthy, and they have to be very careful about traveling and their kids. They're very cautious about where they go with their children because they're fearful about kidnapping. And what kind of life is that? Careful what you wish for. So I love this particular show, Into the Woods, and I really look forward to discovering more about it. And it's just an example of art sharing themes, important themes that go on in our culture over and over and over again. And I continue with this idea. So in addition to Jack and the Beanstalk, we have Red Riding Hood's story. And of course, the wolf is there, and the wolf symbolizes pedophilia. An old man kind of interested in devouring a young child. And there are all kinds of sexual inferences during the exchange between the wolf and the child. And there's the baker and his wife, and they're trying to have a baby. But we learn that the baker is infertile because the witch put a spell on him. And then finally, when they reverse the spell and they're able to have a baby, the mother, the wife, is wanting more. She wants a bigger house. So first she wanted a baby more than anything else and thought that that would be enough. But now they have the baby and now they need more. They need a bigger house. Again, careful what you wish for. One thing always leads to another. Now, Cinderella is also in this show. And I love Cinderella in this particular show because she has a lot of strength, a lot of character. One of my favorite lines is she says, "Sometimes I even enjoy cleaning." And I can relate to that because sometimes I enjoy cleaning my own house. When Disney came out with their new Cinderella movie, I think it was 3 years ago in 2015, there was a line that Cinderella says that has stayed with me, and that is, have courage and be kind. So let's get back to that, because the theme of this show is courage. And I think the best kind of courage is when it comes with kindness. We have a challenge today, and we feel that there's this urgency. There's so much pain and suffering. The earth is warming. The atmosphere is changing. And it may not even be habitable for humanity as it is today. And how do we balance this urgency with courage and kindness? Like I said, I don't have the answer. I just ask the questions. And we should all be talking about this. Waking up, acknowledging what's going on, and addressing it with courage and kindness. I've said this many times before, but I love in the film Finding Nemo, we have another phrase, fish are your friends, not food. The sharks say that. The sharks who want to be vegetarian. I mean, it was a hysterical image, but it was a real image. It was very symbolic of the big brutish tough guys, the sharks known for devouring everything around them, wanting to be vegetarian and having the courage to really try and do that. That was beautiful. So I grab onto these little bit of images. There's a lot of conversation right now within the animal rights movement about sexual harassment. And some of the white male leaders are being called on, are being taken down. I understand Wayne Pacelli is no longer the CEO of the Humane Society. There are a number of names in the news. This is all, I want to think it's good. I don't know what the best way is to deal with all of these things, but sometimes, I'm just going to leave it at that. But there are a number of different organizations that take their activism in different directions. And there's one called Direct Action Everywhere. The acronym is DXE. And they're a very new organization. I think they're about 5 years old. But they have jumped out into the news because they've done a lot of demonstrations that have gotten a lot of press. They go undercover. They do a lot of demonstrating in stores and they do some rescues, they do training, and what they do requires a lot of courage. Is it the right kind of activism? I don't know. But I've been reading, I'm not that familiar with this group, but I understand there was a leader that was involved that was also accused of sexual harassment a few years ago, and I'm not sure if it continues in this organization or not, but it made me think about those who have the courage to do these undercover investigations or to do things where they're really out in the public doing something drastic. What's the fine line between having the courage to do an investigation like this and then feeling the power to think you can take advantage of people sexually with your power? So you can be someone who realizes that our treatment of non-human animals is wrong, and you have that compassion, you have that kindness, you want to do whatever you can to reduce pain and suffering and reach out to people and have them understand that cruelty to animals is wrong and eating animals is wrong and slaughter is wrong, and you get all of that. And yet somehow you feel that it's you take in this power from being courageous and from getting positive feedback from your peers or whatever, from the dramatic things that you've done that empower you to be able to take advantage of other people and not connect the dots between the exploitation of your peers, your human peers, and the non-human animals that you are trying to protect is fascinating, isn't it? Power. What's that fine line? I was thinking about it just this week, working as the conductor in The Music Man. Now, this is a little theater. It's not a big deal. I had a band that consisted of eight pieces, eight musicians, was small. They were all really lovely, lovely people. And towards the end of the run, I think it was Saturday, we closed on Sunday, I got their attention before we started the show. And I wanted to remind them that the scores that we were using were rented and that we needed to make sure after the show that each of our scores before we return them were erased. We can only write in pencil in these scores, and we have to erase all of the markings so that we could return them and other people could use them. Otherwise, you could be fined for returning a score that is marked up. Okay, so when I made this announcement, they all looked at me very attentively with a lot of respect. It was really lovely. But for a moment, I felt power. And I thought for a moment, I mean, this was a tiny example, but I thought about the people who lead groups, lead companies, and are given so much respect and power, and how it can distort, and how it can lead to things that are not good for society. Power is a really fascinating thing. That's why I love the story of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, where they talk about the power of the ring, because it's so symbolic of the power that goes on in today's society and how you really have to be aware of the power that you are given in all situations. You know, back to the story of Into the Woods, the witch, she ended up stealing the baby from the baker's parents. And the baker didn't know this, but apparently the baker's parents, they stole some beans from her garden, and in return she stole their baby. You know, it's fairy tales. Fairy tales that are very similar to some situations in real life, but we don't have to go there. Anyway, she raises this child, and she keeps her in a tower because she wants to protect her from all kinds of evil. But there is a parent with control, with power, and does things that are manipulative and unfair. We don't realize the power that we have in the situations that we have and how it can be misused, how it can be abused. Think about it. Think about the power you have. It's a fascinating thing. Oh, yeah, so I thought about that, and I've just like stepped back. Remember, have courage and be kind. Have courage and be kind. When I was younger, back in the 90s, and I lived in Europe, I had been in activism against smoking. That started when I was really, really young. My sister and I used to put on shows in our backyard when we were like 7 or 8 or 9 to raise money for cancer, the Cancer Society, because we knew that smoking wasn't healthy. And I don't know what motivated us so long ago to want to do that, but we jumped on it. So that was always something that was in me, wanting to prevent people from smoking. And I felt this power when the anti-smoking laws went into effect in various places. And I was traveling around in Europe, and they were not as anti-smoking as we were in the United States. So I was coming from living in California at the time and then moving to Europe. And there was a lot more smoking in Europe. But in many of the airports, they had anti-smoking or non-smoking policies. Some of them had these smoking rooms. I think some of them still do, which is really, really bizarre. anyway, there were these non-smoking policies in the airport, and people would just ignore them. And I couldn't believe it. And I would see someone smoking, and I would go up to them, and I would say, excuse me. I was kind. I was very polite and very kind. And I would tell them, you know, smoking isn't allowed here in the airport. You see these signs. It's not allowed. And every time, the people would ignore me. They didn't care. And I would say, please, don't smoke here. It's not allowed. And they wouldn't do anything. And I would take the cigarette out of their mouth and put it out. I still can't believe that I did this. Where are the courage or the, I don't know that it was just courage. It was, could have been stupidity too. But I would do that. And I was lucky that nobody ever beat me up or caused any more trouble. The fact was that they were always too shocked. Here I was, this petite young woman grabbing cigarettes out of people's mouths. In hindsight, I don't think that was a very good idea. I don't think I accomplished anything at all. And to this day, I can't believe that I did it. And I did it a lot. But I was empowered by the law being on my side at that time. Anyway, having courage, I like to think that you need to have a lot of nerve, have balls, some people say. And speaking of having balls, if you haven't seen it yet, I know I have a lot of new listeners, so I want to bring your attention to a documentary that we did a few years ago called The Lone Vegan. You can find it at responsibleeatingandliving.com/lonevegan.htm. And I spoke to 250 cattle producers about the impact of animal agriculture on global warming. And we weren't preparing to make a documentary when I went to speak on this panel. But after it all happened, my partner Gary and I were just so overwhelmed with what had happened. We felt like we needed to share this story. So we collected all the photos that we took and the few bits of video that we captured, and we put it together and told our story in the documentary, The Lone Vegan. One of the things that the people I spoke to told me was that I had more balls than their bulls. But they were very receptive. And they were receptive because I came with courage and kindness. It's not an easy thing to do. And I thought a long time before speaking to these people how I was going to talk to them, because I wanted my message to be heard. And when we're not kind, it's very difficult for the message to be heard. And so having courage is an important part of it. Having balls, having the nerve. I think about the Cowardly Lion saying he didn't have the nerve, the noive, he would say. It's important, having courage and being kind. There's another story that I want to talk about. Getting back to the AR movement and the discussion of sexual harassment now. I think I've mentioned it a few times on this show. I can't really remember. You know, I've been doing this show for almost 10 years. I have my 9th year anniversary coming up in March. So we've talked about a lot of things. I can't remember everything all at once. But I think it was back in 2002, I went to the Animal Rights Conference in Washington, D.C., which was organized by FARM, the Farm Animal Reform Movement, founded by Alex Herrschaft. And I was there on the board of EarthSave International at the time. Howard Lyman was our president of the organization. EarthSave was founded by John Robbins, the author of Diet for New America. It was a nonprofit he founded. And I don't think EarthSave is, I don't know what EarthSave is doing anymore. I haven't been involved with it since 2010. But at the time, I was on the board, and our board was having some challenges. And we went to this conference, and at the end of the conference, after so many workshops about animal rights and people being empowered to do effective activism, we had the big banquet. And at the banquet, Howard Lyman was the keynote speaker and the MC, and he introduced a young blonde woman. I think she was an actress. And he referred to her as the shape of the movement. And I remember, like, lighting up, thinking, what? What was that he said? No, he didn't really say that, did he? And because he didn't get that much of a reaction, he said it twice and referred to her as the shape of the movement. And this was offensive. It was offensive to many women in the room. It was offensive because there were other women activists who were also being recognized, but because they may not have been as young and attractive as the actress, they were not getting as much recognition as they deserve for the hard work that they had done and continue to do. Anyway, the proceedings went on, and then there was another young blonde woman that Howard Lyman was introducing, and he also referred to her as the shape of the movement. And at that point, I left the room. I just didn't want to hear any of this anymore. And I went out in the hall, and I discovered there were other people in the hallway that were also there for the same reason. We were all offended by this comment. And I thought for a moment, and I thought, I'm going to have courage and be kind. And I worked with Howard Lyman. He was the board president of EarthSave, and I was on the board of directors on the executive committee. And I said, I'll talk to Howard and I'll tell him what is going on, and maybe he'll come out and talk to all of us. And I went over to his table. He was sitting down at his table at that point. And I was very discreet. And I whispered to him. And I said, Howard, there are a number of people out in the hallway, and they're a bit upset about what you said about the shape of the movement. And he glared at me. He turned away, and then he looked back at me, and he said, well, you can go out there and join them. And he didn't want to do anything about it. And that was an unfortunate thing, because the whole thing escalated from there. And I walked out and I shared the story with the crowd, which was now getting bigger. And ultimately, 10 of us got on stage towards the end of the program. And Kim Stallwood got up and made some sort of speech about how we all need to have some equity. I don't remember exactly the words. It sounded rather intelligent and brilliant. I learned later that he hadn't even been there when Howard had said the shape of the movement. He had been sitting in the bar with Martin Rowe, but he did get up and join us. And then we all decided to create a petition that we got over 200 people to sign, including Alex Hershaft, who is the founder of Farm. And when he spoke with me privately, he was in some way siding with Howard Lyman, and implying that I should have known better because Howard and I had some sort of disagreement that I wasn't exactly aware of. I wasn't aware of it all, but apparently Alex was. And he did sign the petition. And the petition, I don't have the exact words in front of me, but it was just about how we need to work together and find a way to treat each other equitably, and as we're learning about not exploiting animals, we need to do the same with our peers. Again, I don't remember what the wording was, but we worked hard on putting together a paragraph that people would sign, and people did. And that was in 2002. Unfortunately, Howard hasn't spoken to me since, and I tried apologizing to him the next morning, telling him I didn't meet anything by what I had said, and I didn't instigate the results. The results happened, the petition happened because so many people were offended. But he decided he wasn't going to talk to me. And I'll be honest with you, I've felt alienated since then because of that activity. And I haven't gone to another animal rights conference as a result. It's just not something that I felt I needed to do. I have my own courageous and kind activism that I do. And sometimes we have to take a different path. So that's my story. It's unfortunate because that was 2002, and that was a starting point that could have grown into something really wonderful. But unfortunately, 16 years have gone by, and now organizations are finally realizing that they need to step up to the plate and stop sexual harassment. And that it is extremely hypocritical in an organization that is working towards eliminating exploitation of non-human animals, because it's got to apply to non-human animals and human animals, everybody. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense, does it? So that's the shape of the movement story. It's a good one, isn't it? Anyway, let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about insurance, because I was just reading in the news, there's discounted health insurance being offered in Israel now. A group called Salal Insurance is offering discounts on health insurance plans for vegans. And this was announced by the finance company LaVie, which is spearheading a wider vegan-friendly initiative. And this just happened. And this is fantastic, because health insurance plans for vegans should exist and include discounts. And I remember about 5 years ago that health insurance companies in the United Kingdom and in the Netherlands also began offering discounted rates for vegetarians and vegans. And even in the United States, we have some health insurance carriers that encourage your clients to eat healthier, but I have yet to see benefits from doing so. I remember Kaiser put out an article encouraging all of their medical providers to encourage plant-based diets to their patients because of the health benefits. And that brings me to remind you, which I've been talking about on every show this year, is our new sponsor of It's All About Food, Health IQ. They are a life insurance company, and they offer discounts to vegans and vegetarians and health-conscious people. And they offer lower rates on life insurance. And if you want to find out more about that, see if you qualify, you can get a quote at healthiq.com/IAAF. healthiq.com/IAAF. IAAF, of course, stands for It's All About Food. Yeah. I mean, that's what insurance is all about. The prices reflect the amount of risk you have. And so it's pretty well documented that vegetarians and vegans live longer and the health risks are lower. So the cost of health insurance and life insurance should reflect the lower risk. We're flying back soon to New York, flying back tonight. And as I mentioned, I've been on this path of staying healthy. This flu epidemic is still affecting people. I know some people that just came down with it really severely. And this is the last leg for my partner, Gary, and I. We finished our intensive program with the Music Man working with many, many children and being around people all day long in a place where we could really be affected by the germs that are in the environment because we work so closely together. There's a lot of breathing, there's a lot of singing, there's a lot of saliva and touching. And oh gosh, I'm glad we can't visualize those germs, because I'm sure the rooms that we've been in have been full of them. But we've been very vigilant. And now is the last part, flying on a plane. And the plane is probably one of the worst places. I don't know if you have any tricks, but my plan today is doing my neti pot at least 3 times before I fly. And then as soon as I get home, I'm going to whip it out and clean myself out again. I found that more than anything else, it's really helped me. I can really feel the germs being washed away. Now, is it a placebo effect? I don't know. But, you know, sometimes you can feel that chill or that tingle in your nose and your throat, and you're like, oh no, I'm feeling that sickness coming on. And that's when you really need to rest, hydrate, and build up your immune system before it finally lets go and lets the germs take over. And that's when I grab the neti pot, and it really makes a difference. I'm also taking a lot of vitamin C, hydrating, making sure we're sleeping. And another great thing about being here in California, and I try and take advantage of it as much as I can, is eating the fruit from people's trees around here. Do you know that fruit grows on trees? It's funny, right? There are some kids that don't even realize that fruit grows on trees. And I'm fortunate to know a lot of people who have citrus trees here in the Bay Area, and they don't know what to do with all their fruit. And I am happy to take some of it from them. And I just got a bunch of fresh oranges yesterday from Gary's cousin, and we've been having a few every day, and I want to make sure that we're full of them before we're on the plane. And I'm stashing a few more away in my luggage so we have some when we get back to the house. Do you have some special things? I know that there are these different vitamin mixes that people take when they fly, and they swear by them. I like to just make sure I'm getting all the nutrients all the time to make my immune system strong, and then kind of step it up just a little bit when I'm going to be in one of these unhealthy places. And while I have your attention, I'm a big fan of taking algae-based DHA and EPA. You're familiar with that. You know, we talk about the importance of getting omega-3 fatty acids in our diet and balancing the omega-6 fatty acids with the omega-3 fatty acids. We don't want to get too many omega-6, even though they're important. We don't want to get too many of them, and they need to be in balance with the omega-6 fatty acids that we get. So that means not using a lot of oils, because most of the oils tend to be high in omega-6. A lot of fried foods, processed foods, are filled with those vegetable oils. Some of them are GMO, and they're full of omega-6 fatty acids, which makes it harder to get that ideal ratio of omega-6 to omega-3s. And to get the omega-3 nutrients, we eat chia seeds and flax seeds and hemp seeds and walnuts. Leafy greens also have them, maybe not in big quantities, but they're there and they're important. But then sometimes the reason why we want these omega-3s in our diet is to convert them to what's called DHA and EPA. And these are very important for brain health and heart health and health in general. And so I like to supplement with algae-based DHA, EPA. Some people will use fish oil. Of course, as a vegan, I'm not going to use fish oil. And I find that fish oil can be troubling in many ways. Some of them are very toxic with concentrated amounts of heavy metals, PCBs, things that fish accumulate in their fatty tissue. So I prefer the algae-based DHA EPA. And the reason why I'm bringing it up is because my favorite brand, which is Dr. Furman's brand, is on sale this week from February 20th to the 27th. You can get 15% off. If you go to my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, you'll see it on the homepage. I have an article that I wrote a while back about why I believe in DHA, EPA, and why I like Dr. Furman's product. It's expensive. I'm going to admit that. It's expensive. That's why I wait for the sales, so that I can get at least a little discount. But I think this is an important product, and I believe everyone is getting the DHA, EPA from the same lab, but it's how they package it. And I found that Dr. Furman's version, even though it seems to be more expensive, is fresher and better tasting. I like the bottle that it comes in better. I just believe he put a lot more thought into it than some of the other companies. And for me, that's worth the extra price. So visit responsibleeatingandliving.com and check out that link. And maybe you'll think about including DHA, EPA into your diet. If you have any questions about it, questions, concerns, things that are not answered in my article, hey, you can email me at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. I am there to answer your comments and questions, and I'm very happy to do it. So the question I posed today, what is the best source of activism? Again, I didn't offer any answers. Do you have any answers? Do you have some ideas on what the best kind of activism is? Some feel it's got to be very dramatic and really shake people up. And some of us like the softer sell. I think we need all kinds of activism, actually. And even though there is this sense of urgency where the environment is in trouble and we need to do things quickly, I kind of keep in mind one of my dad's expressions. You know, I mentioned my dad had many expressions that we liked to use. Some of them we made fun of, we teased him about, and some we continue to use. And he passed in November. And he came up with one last expression when he was in the hospital, when I would try and give him sips of water. He would always say, "No rushing. No rushing." And I think that may be my most favorite expression of his that I am incorporating in my own life, in everything that I do. No rushing. Yes, we are in trouble. The environment is in terrible disrepair, and there's a lot of what seems like momentum, like a snowball that's going downhill and getting bigger and bigger and bigger, that's out of control. But for me, I really feel that the most effective things we can do if we think about them and we're systematic about them and we don't rush. No rushing. That's how I feel. So I believe in having courage, being kind, and no rushing. Okay, just before I go, I have a few minutes left. I want to leave you with some delicious thoughts because it's all about food. And you need to know, if you don't know already, that the best diet for all of us is also, in my opinion, the most delicious and can be easy too. So we had a cast party on Monday. And this was after the show ended, and everybody was invited to bring something, potluck. And as I've mentioned before, we're all aware of everyone's food issues in the cast, or people with nut allergies, or people with celiac, and people who can't eat gluten or are avoiding gluten. And then we have the crazy vegans like me and Gary. And people are very kind about paying attention. So we had different areas. All the food was labeled. And I wanted to bring something But we don't have a big kitchen here. We have an efficiency kitchen. We're staying in a pool house. And we haven't bought a lot of food. And I figured, what can I make from the food we have left over? And it turned out to be gorgeous. So we had some sweet potatoes. We had a package of garbanzo beans, a package of black beans already cooked, and a red onion, tahini dressing, and salad greens. I chopped up the sweet potatoes, cooked them. I mixed them with garbanzo beans, black beans, and red onion, tossed them with a thick tahini dressing. I kept it thick because I wanted the tahini to make it all stick together. Put it in a bowl. And then when I got to the event, I put the salad greens out on a plate and topped it with this sweet potato bean salad. It was gorgeous and it was delicious and it was so easy. Yes, I will post the recipe in the next few days. I haven't gotten around to it, but you'll be able to see it's colorful and lovely. And I'm happy to share that with you today. All right. All I need to do is eat another apple, some more oranges, stay hydrated, maybe get a green juice, and I'll be ready to fly today. And hopefully, we'll complete this trip without getting the flu. All right, thank you for listening. Thank you so much for joining me. I am Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Please visit responsibleeatingandliving.com, where you can get all 9 years of this program archived, catch up, read the transcripts, and find our fantastic recipes. Remember, everybody, have a delicious week. Thank you.